Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. My guest this episode is Patrick Long, Porsche factory driver, Californian, also the new reigning Pirelli World Challenge Series GT champion for Porsche and Wright Motorsports. Known Pat for quite some time, appreciated his just phenomenal talent, someone who has cleaned house in the American Le Mans Series for Porsche, won every major endurance race on the planet. This is truly among the elite when it comes to driving GT cars. Pat also has a cool little bit of history as well in prototypes. Wanted to catch up with Pat to look at where he's at today in his career. I think for many of us, we got to know him as that young gunslinger, the kid who just swept in, beat up on everybody, and was the man. And not as if he's lost a step or that he's any less of the man. But I wanted to catch up with Pat now, father, husband, mid to late 30s. Porsche's asked him to be a little bit of a different character for them. Not just someone who can climb in and drive the wheels off of a car, get wins and titles. They want him to help, to mentor. He's been driving with Daniel Morad, for example, a young talent out of Canada. Hey, Pat, how can you help to expedite his growth, shape him in some ways? Working, again, in both World Challenge paddock, also with the Allegra Motorsports team and IMSA GT Daytona, Pat's become Porsche's North American utility knife. And that's really what I wanted to talk to him about. Hey man, now you are someone that Porsche says, all right, we can parachute this guy in almost anywhere, and he'll either make the program overall a bit better, or a young driver a bit better. And that to me is an interesting evolution. Not every driver gets to do that, or even wants to do that. There's some who just want to be that standalone guy throughout their entire career, and retire is just, you know, them being awesome. Pat has embraced this role, so I wanted to find out about that, where that's come from, and if he's actually enjoying it. We also spoke about his passion for driving vintage race cars, and this is something that I've seen for a couple years. We've done some, what I think are some pretty cool visor cams, all thanks to him, driving a late 1960s Porsche 911 at 11 tenths around Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca. And this is something that he does just out of his own heart, out of passion. You don't see a lot of modern race car drivers just truly circling vintage events on the calendar saying, what can I drive here or there because it enriches me. So that I thought was something really interesting to get into. Then also looking at this career of Pat's, he will be driving race cars for as long as he wants. But looking at the fact that he's now been the man, been established for a long time, where does he see himself going? Knowing that, you know, prototypes are something that he did once. Is that an area he'd love to get back into if that ever became a possibility with Porsche? So just looking at a guy who has transitioned to, let's call it, the second half of his career. And although this was, again, only about 20 minutes worth of a conversation, if you know Pat, you know that he is an awesome conversationalist. So, plus he makes fun of me for use of battle descriptions and death and conquer descriptions. And anytime a guest makes fun of me, that's always awesome. And I also didn't turn my ringer off during the interview too. So, yeah, this is a good one for me to get ripped on because I deserved it. Anyways, you know you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, which is our hosting site, on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page, and also on marshallpruitt.com, which I try to update about once a week with all the new episodes at launch. All right, here we go with Patrick Long, modern edition of the man. Patrick Long, you're at a pretty cool place in your career where our friends at Porsche can say, go to this championship and kill. And you do that. Here's a young driver who we think is pretty darn good. They can gain some knowledge, shine, whatever it is, by having you as a teammate. How do you like this evolution of your career? And I ask that knowing that we can send folks to our friends at Dinner with Racers to get the full Pat Long origin story, which is awesome. Please, please go listen to that. But I wanted to jump in a little bit later in life with where you are now. I think it's really cool, but I don't know if you enjoy this on the multi-purpose tool Porsche can use in so many different ways.
Yeah, to answer your question, I really enjoy my role at the moment, in the sense that racing is a big part of my responsibility, but there are many other facets, and it's very engaging and challenging and different. And so I love that each season brings something new, and it's allowing me to work with new people and learn new skills. But still, I've made it clear that I want to be quick. I want to be relevant, and I want to be winning races and championships, or it doesn't make sense for me to take a seat from someone who is really serious about their driving. So it's definitely a balance that I had to create some trust on, and so far so good. But I think for me, about 2012, I remember being at Le Mans, and it wasn't going well for us for whatever reasons. And I thought to myself, I really love this, but I think there's something else out there too. And I want to keep my eyes open, because for so long you fight to just be the quickest every lap of every session of anything that you get in. You know, it's like a certain point in your career, you have to be the fastest to the rental car desk to prove to the paddock that you're trying to get to, yeah, that you have that desire and that hunger and that speed and talent.
What's different about you as a professional, but also I would say as an individual, from the days of strap into that number 45 Flying Lizard car with Jurg and destroy the world, strap into that P2 car for Roger Penske and chip on your shoulder, prove that you deserve that opportunity, statement making period in your career. What's different about that guy who did those things and kicked ass versus who you are today, where I don't know if you have that same feeling or motivation that you need to do those things because you've proven that you can multiple times?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a complex or loaded question, because there's still the instinct in me, mm-hmm, that the fire that when you go down into turn one, you're the same guy you were all through it. But from a strategy standpoint of how you mold your career or how you take a championship apart and reverse engineer it, I just feel that maybe maturity is starting to form in my mind. It's not there yet, but back in the day, the times that you talked about, sort of 2007, 2008, at that point it was very much a single focus. You know, you're a bachelor, and it's just all about just training and proving yourself and just being an insecure, selfish little prick and just going out on the track and throwing two fingers up to everybody. And then you quickly realize that, first of all, there's a stamp you want to leave on this paddock and in your sport, and that brings you back a little bit to the ground in how you operate and who you high five and who you give a little bit of room to on the track. But also you bring the car back a little cleaner with some of that strategy and some of that perspective. But when it comes down to it, and you still got to qualify the car and you put it on pole, it's the same fight, same belly burn.
So if we look at this weekend, you're working with Daniel Morad. Love that kid. Crazy, crazy potential, but he's also demonstrated a lot. It's not like there's a ton of untapped potential. There's certainly a lot that can be shaped. How much of a mindset do you have coming into a weekend co-driving with a Daniel Morad type where you say, I'm here, they want me to be the fastest and to win and do all these things, but I also see a kid here that if I can lend some things to make them better, maybe that's part of my duty too. Is that an active thing in your head? Does that just happen organically? Do you flip the kid the bird and say, get out of my dressing room? I mean, how does that dynamic work?
Yeah, I mean, it comes back to that sort of humanitarian, philosophical, deep blah blah of like, do you
tell
just,
me your favorite song again?
Yeah, just you kidding. Just do you just come in and just hit all of your personal objectives and you know, just show everybody how good you are, or do you try to provide value to a team, like Carlos, who's putting trust in pulling his son out of the seat and putting me in? There's a responsibility there, and that's with the crew, that's with Daniel, that's getting the car in the right direction. So I think there's more long-term value for me to be a team player, where in 2007 or 2008, I probably would have come in and just been, you know, I'm not turning brake bias stomps, but I'm certainly not going to stay an extra hour and walk a young driver through something. But not to sound like an old, wise, you know, bloodhound, but there was a time when Jörg had to walk me through it as well, and he taught me a ton. I mean, when I started driving with Jörg, I couldn't tell you the difference between bump and rebound. And so it depends on the situation. I mean, everybody's different, and in order to be helped, you have to want to listen. And so that part of it is just case by case with who you're working with. Some people, I'd say everybody needs to be interacted with differently, which is kind of back to that. It's not true that you treat people how you want to be treated in all cases.
That was the media professional, by the way, forgetting to turn the ringer off on his phone.
Oh, all good.
So you have this, as I perceive it, awesome ability to have a split personality. Co-driver, number 28 Porsche 911, GT3R, Daniel Morad, Wright Motorsports, World Challenge, Just Me, outside the SprintX events, visiting hell on everybody possible. And it is truly the Pat Long show in that car. Do you like that dynamic where you can play teammate, play assassin, and do you also switch between those dynamics easily, naturally?
I have to say, sidebar note, you talk a lot about like killing and like hell and
absolutely
death and like murder.
I'm not fucking around.
To your question,
this is motor racing. This is very serious.
To your question,
I mean, this is an integral part of humanity.
To your question, no, I enjoy that. I enjoy variety. I enjoy again that sort of, all right, here's the mission, agent. You this weekend, it's just go out and turn and burn, and here you're a one-man consulting company. I like that variety. I like that it's not always, I don't have the answers. It's not just like, oh, 9 to 5, back to the CNC machine, pushing the button. Not saying there's anything wrong with that, but my mind doesn't work well in that way. Again, I'm back to the kid in class who like wants to get there and figure it out. I don't want to sit there and just A plus B equals C. And so I like that variety, but I've enjoyed World Challenge. I think the team has been a big part of it. It's just a chemistry between me and Bobby V and Johnny and all of their guys. It's like going on a really cool camping trip, and then you're playing with $1 million race cars and going up against factory drivers and teams, so it's cool.
So let me ask a follow-up on this that I hadn't thought of until you mentioned it. So for the sports car racing, Racing Insider, everything you just said will have made complete sense. For the person who maybe knows you a little bit or knows the sport a little bit, they might be saying, so the guy just said he doesn't really like the CNC, the kind of monotony, pressing the button all day thing, yet you're in a career where you get paid to go around for hours at an end at the same track with the same corners where nothing changes. How is that not repetition? How is that different than, say, someone, a crossing guard, every 30 seconds holding up the stop sign and helping the kids come through?
Right.
How is that different?
Well, I would argue that you never go through a corner the same way twice because you have a evolving situation of track changes, car changes, fuel burn, heat soak, driver fatigue, whatever. But on the surface, yes, the action of endurance racing specifically, but racing cars, is a very solo mindset, you against yourself, trying to put laps together that are identical, even though they never are. That part of it goes back to the focus. And for my mind, even in conversation, my mindset can shift and sort of wander. And at 160 miles an hour, you cannot allow yourself to fade in and out of what's right in front of you. So it's almost a drug in the sense that it channels all of my mental energy to one place, and it doesn't allow me to slip out of that mold. So it's the one thing in life that actually got me to shut my mouth and just focus and push that button over and over. So it's almost an antidote.
Brian Ferry, Roxy Music, Love is a Drug. That's a great song. You should listen to it. This is just from a separate podcast.
I've never heard of him or the song, and I'll admit that.
Okay. I have a lot of work ahead of me, but that's okay. I'm the guy with the big music collection. So we're going to wind up here fairly quickly because you have cars to buy and Model Ts to restore and some awesome other stuff to do.
My kid wants to eat. He starts going like this, meow, meow, meow. Have you ever seen that skit, meow?
And he's 12. That's a, that's
yeah, he's got the same reading level as me.
So we were here in the paddock of Mazda Raceway Laguna Seca, what, Pat, a month ago?
Yeah.
And you, of the many reasons that I love you, you know that, so I'm not telling anyone anything new, openly love this guy. We're here. You are super incognito in a trailer, small trailer, nothing like this. There's no refrigerated cooler and air conditioning. You're in a trailer for the weekend, driving, by comparison to your IMSA or World Challenge Hot Rod, an old slow car. That, how could you enjoy something like that? You spend an off weekend up here in a radical vintage Porsche that most people, seeing the other trillion-dollar cars, glamorous, famous vehicles at the at a vintage race, never even recognize. But you're here on a free weekend, which you don't have many of, zero creature comforts, because you love it. Why? What is that thing? Because I wish there were more Pat Longs at vintage events just for the love of it, but we only get a couple. What is that thing?
It's cliche and boring to say it, but I love it. It's the, again, that business challenge of getting in a car that I don't know a ton about. I love driving. I love the Monterey Car Week is just unbelievable because it must be what Disneyland people feel like when they go to Disney World or Disneyland. It's just everywhere you look, there's car people and there's signage and there's cars going up and down the road. So it's like Candyland for a car guy. I like vintage racing because you don't mad dog your competition. You high five everybody. You go and have a drink at the end of the day and laugh at each other's bad lines and screw ups. I can bring my family along and not worry about my little guy waking me up in the middle of the night. It's just low pressure. It's back to racing as a hobby and as a passion and not as a job. So it's just a disconnect. But on a nerdy sort of Porsche buff historical sense, driving a 1968 911, a car that lived through real Sebrings and Daytona 24s in the late 60s. It's like watching a movie. I mean, that engine noise, the challenge, how aggressively loose the car can go at any given moment. You know, it's the closest I'll get to the heyday of sports car racing. So it's sort of the hot tub time machine where you like go back and try to pretend that you're Steve McQueen cool. Not to the outward, but when you're in that car and you strap in and you're like, man, this is dangerous. There's a lot of fast cars. There's a lot of high valued cars out here. And it just kind of, it's a zen moment of racing. I do like doing other things other than just going to racetracks every weekend. I could never race 36 times a year as some do. But as a car pastime, vintage racing is unbelievable. And I like that science of having to double clutch and figure out how to make a torsion bar car go around a track fast.
I'm going to go ahead and copyright bathtub time machine if you ever gets into a vintage 356.
There you go.
So on that topic of the driving portion and passion coming out of this year's event, the last couple, to be honest, the in-car footage, the visor cams of you applying mental amounts of talent to a vintage race car and making it do things that haven't been seen, honestly, since 1968 or whatever era, where the badasses of those days extracted every ounce out of it. One of the greatest joys for me to watch. Tell me about the feedback you've gotten from folks who've watched a Pat Long visor cam in this 1960 whatever, because I know what people tell me, and they're like, this is the best damn thing. These new cars, they're cool. I can't tell one guy from the next because they're all really quick. What that guy's doing in that thing, all right, hands down, you win. What kind of reaction do you get, brother? Because I can't be the only guy who's geeking out.
Oh, I mean, there's always going to be trolls and commentators and couch quarterbacks, but...
Yeah, but those people should die.
I'm happy. There it is again. I'm happy. Murder. Like, cup Death. Of coffee, 6 a.m., walking the beach with my dog to wake up and just, like, enjoy life. I could care less about sifting through YouTube commentary. So I'm just out there having fun. Just the same kid that would go around a dirt backyard while my dad's inside installing stairs, and I'm just going around three cones in a go-kart over and over. I just enjoy it, and I'm here to experience cars and events and meet new people. And yeah, you know, the main thing when you drive vintage is that you respect that the objective out on the track is very different, so you have to bring it back, because not everybody's there to win, not everybody's there to better their lap time. A lot of guys don't even know what their lap time is. Hell, they don't even show you your lap time until the race. So you have to bring it back a step, because it's like you put a horse in the gate and tell them that this isn't a race. It's kind of the first mindset that has to change a little bit. I'm still pushing hard, but I'm just leaving more room and giving a little more respect. But also the cars I'm driving, I drive them at different aggression levels depending on where the owner's objectives are in allowing me to drive that car. Some guys want me to just shake a car down and just go 6/10 and tell them what I think of it and do a couple photos, take a couple photos. Other guys are like, dude, I want you to hammer this thing like it's never been hammered before, and I want to see asses and elbows, black lines, and just get it done. And those are the guys I sort of migrate towards as car owners, because they're out to live life and enjoy the cars and not pet them at home. And the guy that I drive for at Monterey, and I drove at Rennsport, there's a couple owners, and they want to see these cars run and they want to see them win, and they drive them as well, but there's something that they get an enjoyment of seeing that car out there on the ragged edge. So I'm happy to be their guy.
Gunslinger, murder, death, assassin. I'm going to keep throwing that in.
I'm happy to kill tires and murder brake pads.
Yes. This will be my last question for you. I'm not pretending that this is the last time. I'll probably want to explore it with you. So you're at an interesting phase in your career where you've done a phenomenal amount of things, but at still a young age. You're not an Elio Castroneves or a Tony Kanaan, guys we love, but now in their 40s looking at a transition, you're nowhere near that. But you are at a place where you have locked into a specific career in sports cars, primarily GT. I remember learning about you as a kid trying to be open wheel guy. Mm-hmm. I watched intently, hoping that Roger Penske would keep running RS Spiders for years, and that would be a home for you. Is there a substantive part of you that wants to revisit either open wheel, prototypes, not saying at the exclusion of what you're doing now, but hey, if an opportunity to go to Europe and do a couple of ELMS races in a P2 car, if I could do, I don't know if it's IndyCar, but hey, some Indy Lights races, something on these branches of your career that didn't really get to extend as far as I would have loved to have seen them. Is there anything inside of you that, you know, serious that says, boy, if I could, I don't know if I'd want to retire before feeling as if I'd actually pushed a little further in those areas?
No. Where I'm at, I feel I've pushed to be where I'm at. I've pushed to have a 15-year career with Porsche, and I hope to go another 10 years in that. I prefer driving GT cars. I excel with a heavier, more challenged on the tire situation. That's back to what I as a driver, style wise, it's just what I've done since I was a kid. When I went and drove V8 supercars, that's where I found having more car than a tire, more horsepower than traction. Those are the places that I enjoy and where I ultimately excel. So, no, I'm right where I want to be. Racing doesn't owe me anything. There's not a race that keeps me awake at night that if I could win this race, I would feel like my career was complete. I'm not complacent. I want to win as bad as I ever have, but I'm not looking across the street or left or right to a neighbor and thinking, I wish I had his life. I just feel like racing in competitive situations with people that you enjoy going racing with, that's awesome. Winning big races is huge. I have an ego, and I want to have big trophies on my mantle, and I want multiples of those trophies and championships. But no, I'm completely content, and you know, getting to race NASCAR Cup Baja 1000, V8 supercars. Those were things that were on my bucket list, and I worked hard to achieve opportunities, because sometimes GT guys in sports car aren't the first household name when other teams are looking for drivers. So I had to hustle to get those opportunities, and I'm glad that I did them. But it also reconfirmed that I like where I'm at. And I don't look at a certain type of racing and think, oh man, you know, that if I, no, it's all good.
It's all good in the hood, says Patrick Long, Boys and Girls. Thanks, brother.
Thank you.
And that was the artist known as Plongy, as the Australians dubbed him on his first appearance down under in the V8 Supercar Series. Always enjoyed time spent with Pat, and I am sure we will find some more cool things to talk about next year. All right. I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. Thanks for listening.